Good evening, everybody. Mike Malloy here. Welcome to the program. Glad you could make it. In about an hour, we will be joined by our newest affiliate, WWZN Radio in Boston. They will be taking two of the 3 hours of the Malloy program to begin with, thanks to our crack marketing team for getting us into Boston a little bit later this evening, about an hour. One of the big stories tonight, of course, is what's going on in New York's 23rd Congressional District with all the madness up there. I don't know. I find it amusing. I really don't give a damn how that turns out. But I got this email from MZ who writes, hi, Mike. Just a story about New York District 23. I knew a guy who was a teacher in a town in that district. He used to show the Manchurian Candidate movie to his students for reasons of explaining to them how propaganda can be effective. He was threatened with his job by his principal and superintendent to not show the movie because it showed McCarthyism in a bad light. I grew up in that area. It's been in an economic depression for 45 years. Jobs are scarce. Poverty is rampant. And allegiance to myth and false history is widespread. If Hitler was running against Mother Teresa in the 23rd, Hitler would probably win. When Obama talked of people in so much fear that they grabbed their guns and cling to their religion, he described District 23. MZ. Yeah, I've heard the same thing. Thanks, MZ, for sending in. I've heard basically the same thing. Like I say, I really don't care. If wherever the Republicans win tonight in the few races that that are being conducted today, excuse me, it'll be touted as some kind of a second coming of the Republican Party, which is not true. The Republican Party is dead. The Democratic Party is dead too, but the Republican Party especially is dead. I never get in the way when your enemies are ripping each other to pieces. And that's what the conservatives and the Republicans are doing. They're just chewing on each other's throats. I say keep it up, boys and girls, keep it up. Who's this? Melba? Melvin? Mike, I just heard a lady say on your radio program that it was hard to bill Medicaid or Medicare. Oh, this is from the other night. I'm not a doctor. I'm a clinical social worker. I bill Medicaid and Medicare. They are very simple to bill. Medicaid is the best. Medicare is a little harder, but not that bad. They also have regular workshops to help you understand how to bill. They pay very fast. Insurance companies make you jump through hoops. Some of them I've never been able to understand, so I have never been able to bill them. Some of them... Now, wait a minute. Where'd that go? Oh, so I've never been able to bill them. I see some clients for free because they cannot afford to pay me, and I don't understand how to bill their insurance. Wow, that was in regard to, I think it was last night, we had a caller say that it was difficult for doctors to bill Medicaid, and I don't know what my answer was. I didn't know what I was talking about, obviously, but thanks for writing in, clarifying that. you knew this was going to happen. This is from Wakita, Oklahoma? Yeah, Oklahoma. This is in the Tulsa World yesterday. Wakita, Oklahoma, Wakita, Oklahoma, like other places around the country, are desperately in need of jobs. So Wakita, according to the Tulsa World, is a tiny little town near the Oklahoma-Kansas state line, north of Enid, Oklahoma. And it may soon own the country's only all-Christian prison, with Christian administrators, Christian employees, Christian counselors, and Christian programs. The idea is backed by the town's leaders, and it has some support from state officials. The people who are trying to put this together believe it would be able to pass constitutional muster. Oh, really? Separation of church and state. Well, all you have to do is contract out the prison to one of these prison industrial complex, organizations. And then turn it into a Christian prison, and there's no problem. There's no problem at all, right? A Christian prison. I did a little research before the show about what both the Old and New Testaments had to say about prison. And what I've found, especially in the New Testament, it's all about compassion and treating prisoners with love. And the Old Testament, of course, is kind of ambiguous about it. If it's one of the Hebrew people who go to prison, then, of course, it's very compassionate. If it's somebody else that goes to prison, of course, you know, it's the Old Testament, then, you know, no mercy. So an all-Christian prison, I don't know. I don't know. It's a 150-acre site on the edge of the town of Wakita. An agreement has been reached with Corrections Concepts, Inc. to manage the prison if and when it's built. Correction Concepts Incorporated. Isn't that a lovely name? So that's one of your private prison industrial complex management teams. It would still be a state prison, but it would be managed by Corrections Concepts Incorporated. You like that? That's cool, isn't it? Huh? If it's built, it would be a 600-bed prison. The population of Wakita is 380. It would be a $42 million project, and it would be financed with bonds, state bonds or city bonds, I guess state bonds. A bond underwriting company said that if a government jurisdiction will commit to sending 310 inmates, it'll cost $42.80 a day, bond sales can begin. Oh, my God. I don't know. This is kind of like that story last night about the ship, the Navy attack ship that was made out of steel from the collapsed trade towers. And that just creeped me out. This creeps me out, too. I don't know. Now, who is this guy? Robinson. Hold on a second. Because Bill Robinson, who's the founder of Corrections Concepts, Inc. Oh, I see. That's a Dallas nonprofit prison ministry. Okay. They would manage it. Corrections Concepts, Inc. Now, that's run by a guy named Robinson. What's his first name, Mike? Come on. What's his first name? Bill. Bill Robinson. He is himself an ex-convict and a prison minister. And he said he'd been working for years on the idea of an all-Christian prison. And he had invested $1.3 million so far on construction plans and other expenses. $1.3 million, an ex-con and a prison minister. Wow. There's money in the God business, isn't there? Lots of money. He said a lot of prisons have faith-based or Christian units, but he knows of none with an all-Christian staff. He said, quote, the staff, being all born-again believers, will see this as a mission. So, forced Christianity. Now, what if you're a Muslim or a Jew or an atheist or a Native American who believes in a Native kind of religion? I mean, what happens to you if you are convicted, and so do you have a choice of prisons now? Can you stand in front of the judge and say, well, I don't want to go to the Christian prison? And then the judge will say, why not? Say, well, because I'm not a Christian. And the judge will probably say, well, that's why you committed these crimes. Get your ass in prison. Go to that Christian prison. I don't know. It's just too bizarre. It's just too freaking bizarre. Christian prison. Oh, my God. Speaking of the prison industrial complex. As soon as we come back, a little bit more on Blackwater Z, the murder industrial complex. We'll be right back.
fairy tale. What? On what used to be solid ground. Nobody was ever
21
get
past the hour.
Legend Ali.
Regarding the Christian prison, Michael says, does that mean all the executions will be carried out by crucifixion? Probably half. The other half will be by stoning. All right. Another frightening aspect of American corporatism, capitalism, of course. You know, capitalism is such a predatory, vicious, vile, bloodthirsty economic system. It really is. Cracks me up to see all these teabaggers this past summer who were holding up copies of Ayn Rand's books, Fountainhead and what was the other one? Fountainhead and Atlas Shrugged, like Robert Rourke or what was the other guy, John Galt, were somehow interested in them. Ayn Rand wasn't. Ayn Rand, okay, wasn't interested in these people either. I mean, hoi polloi to her were scum, something to grind under her feet. So it was just so funny to me to see this this past summer. All that to say that, you know, capitalism, I know some people are thinking, well, Molloy's just completely flipped over to the dark side now. Wasn't socialism our enemy for 50 years? No, it wasn't. Socialism was never your enemy or mine. Communism was. Totalitarian socialism is. Democratic socialism is about the only political slash economic system left that might be able to save capitalism, because capitalism, folks, is dead. It really is. What you are seeing now is a stumbling, ghoulish corpse that is like Night of the Dead or the George Romero movie. What was that? Was it Night of the Living Dead, where all the the corpses and the zombies and the come back? That's what capitalism now. Matter of fact, time permitting, I'll share something with you about the death of capitalism. But anyway, Blackwater is proof positive, and these prison industrial complex companies, is just blinding proof of the predatory nature of capitalism. The health insurance companies are another example. It just goes on and on and on. Of course, the financial services industry. But get this. This is being reported by Press TV. Pakistan's pro-Taliban militants blame private U.S. security firm Blackwater for last Wednesday's bomb blast in Peshawar that killed over 100 people, most of whom were women and children. So-and-so, head of so-and-so, I can't read these Muslim names, said Blackwater and some Pakistani agencies were involved in the bomb explosion at a crowded market in Peshawar. Now, of course, we know this is all nonsense. This is coming from a Muslim an Arab speaker or a Persian speaker. This is coming from... this report is coming from Iraq or Iran or Indonesia or someplace where, you know, it's all Muslims. And we all know that only Jews and Christians tell the truth. Well, okay, maybe not the Jews. Certainly not the Muslims. The only ones that tell the truth are the Christians. We know that, right? And we also know the moon is made out of green cheese and that there's no such thing as global warming. But I digress. According to the latest reports, the death toll has mounted to 106, over 150 injured. More people could still... They're still working on getting... trying to clear the debris. Most of the dead were women and children. The Pakistan Army says since the militants are facing defeat in South Waziristan tribal region, they are now targeting the people. But on Sunday, this past Sunday, about 200 supporters of the such-and-such party held an anti-U.S. demonstration in so-and-so denouncing Blackwater and chanting anti-U.S. slogans. The provincial chief of the blankety-blankety party, named blankety-blank, said that the Pakistani operation against militants, which is being conducted with the consent of America, should be stopped, as it only fulfills the aims of the enemy. Blah, 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 blah. He also went on to say, now this is true, all the blasts either carried out on Faisal Mosque or Khyber Bazaar are carried out by Blackwater. But like I say, this is coming from an Iranian press organization. That's what PressTV.ir is. It's Iranian. It's therefore Persian. And we all know, since it's a Muslim, that they lie. The only press corps that tells the truth, according to millions upon millions of Americans, is Fox. And to a lesser degree, ABC, CBS, and NBC. Oh, and CNN. Oh, and MSNBC. You know, they tell the truth, don't they, truth seeker, right? But Al Jazeera or PressTV.ir or the South India Times or whatever it is, they are either out-and-out liars or suspect. So we can reject completely the story that the bombing in Peshawar was carried out by Blackwater. Just forget about it. Move on. Nothing to see here. It's about 25 before the hour. In just a couple of minutes, I want to talk to you about the Goldstone Report. Do you know what that is? Richard Goldstone, who is a South African jurist. He's Jewish, and according to his Zionist daughter, he is a Zionist. He is the author of the Goldstone Report that he was asked to write by the... I think the UN Human Rights Council asked him to write this sort of a Israeli-Palestinian the overview of the Gaza war. I'll get to that in a second. But then there's this. I don't know how to respond to this either. After we hear that the Iranian news agency PressTV.ir is reporting that insiders in Pakistan and Afghanistan are fully aware that Blackstone Z are the ones who carried out the bombings in Peshawar that killed so many women and children. Now comes this from Islam Online. They are claiming that the U.S. has offered the Taliban six provinces to be placed under their control in exchange for U.S. bases, for eight U.S. bases. According to Islam Online, Afghan government sources confirmed, quote, U.S. negotiators had offered the Taliban leadership through Mullah Wakil Ahmed Mutawakil, the former Taliban foreign minister, that if the Taliban will accept the presence of NATO troops in Afghanistan, they would be given the governorship of six provinces in the south and northeast. That's according to a senior Afghan foreign ministry official who said this to IslamOnline.net. He requested anonymity for not being authorized to talk about this issue with the media. He said the talks were brokered by Saudi Arabia and Turkey and continued for weeks at different locations, including the Afghan capital, Kabul. Saudi Arabia, along with Pakistan and the United Arab Emirates, were the only states to recognize the Taliban regime, which ruled Afghanistan for about 5 years. Turkish Prime Minister Recep Erdogan has reportedly been active in brokering talks between the two sides. A Taliban spokesman admitted indirect talks with the U.S. Yusuf Ahmadi, the Taliban spokesman in southern Afghanistan, told Islam Online from an unknown location via satellite phone, quote, yes, there were some indirect talks, but they did not work, end quote. He went on to say, quote, there are some people who are conveying each other's messages, but there were no direct talks between us and America. Afghan and Taliban sources said Mutawakkil and Mullah Muhammad Saif, former envoy to Pakistan, who had taken part in previous talks, represented the Taliban side in the recent talks. The U.S. Embassy in Kabul denied any such talks. Embassy spokeswoman Kathleen Hayden told Islam Online, quote, "No, we are not holding any talks with Taliban," end quote. Asked whether the U.S. had offered any power-sharing formula to Taliban, she said she was not aware of any such offer. Bing, 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 bing. She was not aware of any such offer. Uh-huh. She said, quote, "I don't know about any specific talks, and the case you are reporting is not true." The qualifier there, "I don't know about any specific talks," and the pre-qualifier, she said she was not aware of any such offer. If the Taliban would agree to our building, maintaining 8 bases in Afghanistan, we would in turn give them control of 6 provinces. Well, of course. I mean, who's to doubt such an offer was made? The United States does not want to commit troops in a combat situation in Afghanistan. All the capitalists who run this country want is a clear understanding that the pipeline from the Caspian Sea area will go undisturbed. That's all. All this bull hockey about, you know, fighting for the rights of the Afghan people is just that. It's nonsense. Capitalism doesn't give a damn about A, indigenous people, or B, how many women and children are killed in bomb explosions. They don't care about that. What they care about is, where's the money? Come on. I'm not educating you. You know this. They couldn't care less about whether or not little Afghan girls get to go to school or if they'll be burned alive for doing so. Capitalism doesn't care about that, and the people that run capitalism don't care about that. They care about getting the gas and the oil before the Chinese do. That's all. Jesus, that's easy. So whether or not these talks are being held are, I mean, there's no question there. We already tried once with the Taliban back in 1998, 1999, when we flew them to Houston. Not we, but a couple of international oil consortiums with the backing of the U.S. State Department, of course, under Clinton. When these people were flown from Kabul to, what's the capital of Pakistan? Don't write to me, I just can't think of it. And then flown to the United States. There was a meeting that was reported fully in, what was the book, Kathy, once again, by the French intelligence and the French journalists? Yeah, Bin Laden, : The Forbidden Truth. And it's all laid out in the book. It's all there. That book came out just prior to or just subsequent to our invasion of Afghanistan. But it's all there. So this would be another attempt to cut a deal with the Taliban. The Taliban are not interested in cutting a deal. They want the United States the hell out of their country. That's all. And the NATO and the Russians and the Greeks and the Kublai or Genghis guy, whoever. You know, get out. Get out. That's all. The U.S. Embassy in Kabul denied any such talks. Right. And the Taliban were never brought to Houston. This is where the offer was made. Look, let us build the pipeline and you can pave your streets in... No, what was it? Let us build the pipeline. Yeah, and you can carpet your streets with gold, or we will carpet bomb you. Now, I don't think anyone in the U.S. government said that, not directly. That was spoken by the capitalist oil moguls who was in on that meeting was Hamid Karzai, of course. I mean, that's why he's president now. The U.N. Human Rights Council report on the December-January last year, Gaza conflict was released a couple of months ago. Right before Barack Obama tried to jumpstart the Israeli-Palestinian negotiations again. However, it was just the latest in a series of investigations, most of them by human rights organizations. And as the Nation reports in its October 12th issue, like its predecessors, the so-called Goldstone Report, named after Chief Investigator Richard Goldstone, is devastating in its critique of Israeli actions. Indiscriminate use of firepower, deliberate attacks on civilians and civilian structures, including hospitals, schools, mosques, water plants, use of human shields, abusive treatment of detainees, imposition of a blockade on Gaza before and after the attack itself. The report concludes that Israeli violated violated international humanitarian law, committing, quote, grave breaches of the Fourth Geneva Convention in respect of willful killings and willfully causing great suffering to protected persons, end quote, and war crimes, possibly even crimes against humanity. Now, why am I talking about this? Because as Israel goes, so goes the United States and vice versa. We are like conjoined twins. Period. End of story. The Israeli journalist who is described by the Nation as courageous, I agree, Gordon Levy, Gideon Levy, I've quoted him many times, he summed it up, the Goldstone Report, pretty well in Haaretz newspaper in Israel. He said that the Israeli attack was, quote, an unrestrained assault on a besieged, totally unprotected civilian population, which showed almost no signs of resistance during this operation, end quote. Now, the reason I'm bringing this up tonight is because today, while you and I were, to whatever degree, greater or lesser, probably most of us really don't care, but while the elections were going on around the country today and all this focus on the stupid-ass 23rd district in New York, like, yawn, who cares? And the governorship of New Jersey, who cares? And the governorship of Virginia, which has been run by a graduate of Regents University now, Pat Robertson's phony school. While all that was going on, the U.S. House of Representatives passed a resolution rejecting the Goldstone Report. Now, why do you suppose the Goldstone Report was rejected? The chief author is a South African judge who is a Zionist Jew who, according to his daughter, loves Israel. Loves Israel. He serves on the board of governors of Hebrew University. His daughter said, quote, I know that if he thought what he did would not somehow be for the sake of peace for everyone in Israel, or that it would have hindered such efforts, he would not have accepted the job. All right, I'll tell you why in a second. I've got some more here. Stay with us. I'm Mike Molloy.
Before
the hour, we're reporting on the Goldstone Report. It was rejected today, a non-binding resolution passed by the U.S. House. As the nation says, predictably, the Goldstone Report was met with a wave of angry denunciations from the Israeli government, which, by the way, had refused to cooperate with this investigation. The mainstream media in Israel have downplayed the report's significance. News coverage in that country has been sparse. In this country, it's been zero. Not one major U.S. daily has seen fit to editorialize on it. U.S. pundits and politicians, including UN Ambassador Susan Rice, called it, quote, unbalanced, one-sided, and basically unacceptable, end quote. But as the nation says, it's not so easy to dismiss these findings. For one thing, the nearly 600-page report is carefully documented and comprehensive, based on field visits, public hearings, almost 200 individual interviews, photos, satellite imagery, and a review of more than 300 other reports. For another, aspect of this. Richard Goldstone is one of the most respected and experienced international jurists, having served as a justice on South Africa's Constitutional Court and chief UN prosecutor for the International Criminal Tribunals for the former Yugoslavia and Rwanda. Do you understand that? Richard Goldstone is no naif. And then, of course, as I mentioned, Goldstone's personal connections. He's Jewish, and according to his daughter, he's a Zionist who loves Israel. Before taking the job, Goldstone insisted on expanding the mission's mandate so that it would also cover Palestinian acts. So far from being one-sided, as these sons of bitches are saying, the report concluded that Hamas rocket and mortar barrages on southern Israel were, quote, indiscriminate attacks upon the civilian population, end quote, acts that, quote, would constitute war crimes and may amount to crimes against humanity, end quote. International law expert Richard Falk has concluded that, quote, no credible international commission could reach any set of conclusions other than those reached by the Goldstone report on the central allegations, end quote. Now, Richard Falk points out there are good reasons for Israel's panic reaction. Goldstone recommends that Israel and Hamas carry out serious, comprehensive investigations of their own into the alleged crimes, and that if they do not do so within 6 months, the UN Security Council should consider referring the matter to the International Criminal Court in The Hague. Now, that won't happen, of course, because the United States has veto power on the Security Council. But as the nation points out, the report will further diminish Israel's reputation and will probably strengthen the growing international boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement. Now, what happened today was typical. Anyone could have predicted it. As a matter of fact, I think two of our correspondents, Sheila and Reg, probably predicted it. U.S. House of Representatives passed a resolution today while we were all looking the other way, rejecting the findings of the Goldstone Report, which says that Israel committed war crimes. The House voted today in favor of a non-binding resolution calling on Barack Obama to maintain his opposition to the report. The report accused Israel and Hamas of war crimes during the 22-day conflict in December and January. The report reserved most of its criticism for Israel's conduct during the offensive, in which 1,400 Palestinians, many of them women and children, were killed. 13 Israelis, including 3 civilians, were killed over the course of the war. 1,400 Palestinians, 13 Israelis. The U.S. House vote comes a day before the U.N. General Assembly, tomorrow, is expected to debate its own resolution endorsing the findings of the Goldstone Report. Kristen Salumi, who works for Al Jazeera, reporting from the U.N. in New York, said that while the majority of the Assembly's members, member nations, the U.N. General Assembly, were expected to vote in favor of the resolution, the U.S. vote today was likely to dampen the impact. Kristen writes, quote, remember, the key recommendation of Goldstone is to get a credible investigation into the alleged war crimes that the Goldstone Commission found evidence of in Gaza. And the UN Security Council is the only body that can move forward and demand an investigation, end quote. And then she adds, quote, the General Assembly just does not have that power. Of course, on the Security Council, the U.S. is a veto-wielding member. And as the congressional vote today underscores, the U.S. is not going to be interested in moving forward in the Security Council to call for an investigation by the International Criminal Court or anyone else for that matter. Oh, man. Stephen Rothman, a Democratic congressman from New Jersey, told Al Jazeera that the report was biased against Israel, even after the Goldstone Commission's mandate was expanded so that it could investigate war crimes alleged to have been committed by Hamas. And Goldstone himself, the judge, last week sent a letter to the U.S. House of Representatives saying that the text of the U.S. resolution had, quote, factual inaccuracies and instances where information and statements are taken grossly out of context, end quote. The Goldstone Report, which accused Israel of using disproportionate force and of deliberately targeting civilians, calls for independent investigators to be held into Israel's investigations, I should say, to be held into Israel and Hamas's conduct during the war. Hamas has agreed to hold such investigations. Israel has not. So, I don't know how many people really who listen to this program really give a tinker's damn about any of this. But, you know, injustice anywhere is injustice everywhere or something like that, right? So we probably would not hear any more about this. But it disgusts me. It turns my stomach. It just makes the bile rise in my throat to think that the United States House of Representatives has the goddamn audacity to reject on its face a report because it's critical of Israel. I mean, that is so disgusting. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. Hour 2 of the Malloy program tonight. And want to welcome now, I guess I can do it officially, AM 1510 in Boston, WWZN Radio. What's it called? Revolution Radio? We are very happy to be in your city. And we'll be on Monday through Friday from 10 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time. Our program runs 9 p.m. to midnight across the country, but for the time being, it's going to be 10 p.m. to midnight in Boston. And just a word of caution to the people who are listening in Boston. This program is different from so-called progressive or liberal radio in a lot of ways. You'll discover very quickly. That's A. B, I cuss a lot. I really do. And it's just part of who I am. So if that offends you, I don't know what to say. I really don't. I don't step outside the boundaries of broadcast standards and practices and the FCC, this and that. But, yeah, I will say cuss words when I'm very, very pissed off. I'm also extremely anti-religious. I am an atheist. I am also a democratic socialist. If you don't know what that term means, look it up. To the management of WWZM, thank you very much for carrying this program. We do appreciate it very, very sincerely. However, prepare yourselves. Prepare yourselves for an onslaught of critical emails and phone calls about, get that son of a bitch off the air! You know, that sort of thing. He's a communist! And worse. So, to the management, again, of AM 1510 in Boston, thanks a lot for giving us a shot, guys and gals. We'll do our best to entertain. And if you are a listener in Boston, here's what you can do. Just give the program 2 weeks. If we don't start growing on you, okay, leave. And that'll be my fault. But it's your obligation to tune into this program here at the beginning because AM 1510 is putting it out there. If you don't like what you hear, adioski. All right, where were we? Obama. Obama last, when was it? Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. President Obama signed legislation authorizing the largest ever military budget. Are you aware of this? $680 billion for the Pentagon. That is obvious. Now, as you and I know, because we're not totally stupid. We haven't been completely brainwashed. There's probably another $200-300 billion that's off the books. This $680 billion includes $130 billion for the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Now, that's something new and different because during the Bush years, all the wars were carried off the books in emergency supplementals. Remember all that? I need $30 billion. I need $50 billion. Give me $10 billion. If you don't love America. You remember all that, horse snot. Last Thursday, he signed a spending bill funneling another $44 billion into the Department of Homeland Security to strengthen the... call it the apparatus of state repression within the U.S. Now, as WSWS.org reports, the back-to-back bill signings are a clear demonstration that Obama is extending and intensifying the program of militarism and attacks on democratic rights for which the Bush administration was deservedly hated. But now, you know, the great black hope, our guy, Barack Obama. You know, how many times have we talked about this? He was a blank slate on which we wrote whatever we wanted to during the campaign, right? He was going to save America. I guess not. The Pentagon budget bill authorizes the use of military tribunals to try prisoners at Guantanamo and others seized illegally, either overseas or within the U.S. as part of the so-called war on terror. Did you hear that? The Pentagon budget bill authorizes the use of military tribunals. But, you're saying, I thought that was... No, it hasn't been ended. It hasn't been. The Department of Homeland Security appropriations bill effectively prohibits the release of photographs taken by U.S. military personnel during torture sessions in Iraq, Afghanistan, Guantanamo, and wherever else photographs are taken. The Homeland Security Appropriations Act exempts those photos from the provisions of the Freedom of Information Act, under which the ACLU and several other media outlets have filed suit in federal court. Now, the exemption would apply not just to the photos sought by the ACLU, but to any photos taken between September 11th, 2001 and January 22nd, 2009. If the Pentagon does not want them released. Do you understand that? Seven and a half years of photographs of the atrocities committed under the direction of the Bush Justice Department. Under the direction of the Cheney Justice Department, the Cheney CIA, the Cheney private torture contractors. None of this evidence, the evidence that's left, of course, can be made public through Freedom of Information Act or any other means of getting out to the public exactly what our leadership in this country has done. It's gone. Memory hole. Gone. Obama signed the Pentagon budget bill, almost three-quarters of a $1 trillion. Think about this. I mean, $750 billion. This is for 1 year. 1 year. He signed this budget less than 3 weeks after he got the Nobel Peace Prize. And he then traveled right after he signed it. This is last week. He went to Dover Air Force Base in Delaware to greet the coffins of 18 U.S. military personnel killed in Afghanistan. And by, late this week, next week, a decision on how many additional U.S. troops will be sent to Afghanistan is expected. The $680 billion authorized for the Pentagon. $680 billion. And again, that is the visible Pentagon budget. The black budget, so-called, the off-the-books budget, is probably another $200 billion. So let's call it almost $1 trillion, the $1 trillion authorized for the Pentagon. This is just for fiscal year 2010, is an increase of about 4% authorized last year. And that bill was authorized during the last years of the bad old Bush crime family. So this is an increase, 4% increase. The good guys... The guys in the white hats. The Barack Obama administration has appropriated more money than the Bush-Cheney crime family did before they left office. Now, that 4% increase is despite the pledged drawdown of U.S. forces deployed in Iraq. The number of our troops in Iraq is projected to fall from 120,000, which it is today, to about 50,000 by next September. At the signing ceremony, Obama turned to Robert Gates, who used to work for Bush and Cheney, Obama's defense secretary. He turned to him and offered special praise. Obama declared, quote, "This effort would not have been possible without an extraordinary Secretary of Defense. On behalf of the American people," Obama said, "I want to thank you, Bob, for your extraordinary efforts," end quote. Now, of course, U.S. media has given this no attention whatsoever, just like the Goldstone report, no attention whatsoever. The New York Times headlined its report on the signing of this largest ever military spending bill as, quote, "victory for Obama over military lobby." Because the Times article claimed that the deletion of a few big-ticket weapon systems like the F-22 a fighter jet, that that represented reform.
You don't have to. It's More Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. Well, it looks like it's going to be a clean sweep for the crazy people in this country tonight. Apparently, the John Corzine in New Jersey has been defeated. And this graduate of Pat Robertson, that was in Virginia. Isn't he a graduate, the new governor, a graduate of Pat Robertson's Regents University? And then the really crazy freak up in the 23rd District of New York, who doesn't even live in the district, who drove the Republican out. He calls himself an independent, but he's, I don't know what he is. So it looks like he's going to win, too. So, all right, rock and roll. What else? Oh, yeah. Going back to the bill that Obama signed for Pentagon and Homeland Security spending, together, the combined total of war spending and spending for spying on Americans is $724 billion. That's the visible stuff. That's why I said let's call it $1 trillion. That's for war and repression. And it kind of demonstrates, sadly to me, since I was... by default, but still an advocate for Obama once he won the nomination. But I think it's a clear indication that what the WHO said, say hello to the new boss, same as the old boss. This is what has happened. You know, the corporatization of the country, which is a polite way of saying making this country a fascist state. We are so close. And Barack Obama is sadly, sad to me. I mean, I know a lot of you people who are much more politically sophisticated than I am are saying, come on, Molly, for Christ's sake. You knew this all along. Well, I had hope. See, you know, I'm a sucker for good rhetoric. But, you know, not anymore. Not anymore. I get it. I always did get it, at least this. I really did. But, you know, you kind of, you kind of hope against hope that, that what you know to be true is not really true. What did Elizabeth Kubler-Ross call it? You know, the first stage of grieving is denial. That's all. You know, just denial. No, this can't be. I guess I'm at the, I went through the bargaining stage. What am I in now, Kathy? Acceptance? I think I'm almost at, well, it comes right before acceptance. Do you remember? I don't either. Oh, well. Anyway, the $1 trillion clearly demonstrates what the priorities are for the Obama administration and for the American ruling class as a whole. Do you have any doubts? And at this rate, let's just pretend like there's no off-the-book spending. Let's pretend like it's only $724 billion for these two, Department of Homeland Security and the Department of War. At that rate, $724 billion, the Pentagon and Department of Homeland Security will spend more in 18 months than the entire cost of Obama's health care reform. 2 months of Pentagon Homeland Security spending would cover the cost of the budget, cover the budget deficits of all 50 states. Jesus God. Now, the money that will go to Department of Homeland Security has a whole bunch of reactionary provisions and suppressive things. A lot of it targeted towards immigrants. One component of the Pentagon authorization bill is the Military Commissions Act of 2009. That's this year, which retains the military tribunals established by the Bush crime family. There's a few cosmetic changes, like prohibiting the use of prisoner testimony derived from torture. And even that can be defeated. Even that prohibition, there are ways around that. The Department of Justice spokesman told Time magazine that the military commissions would be, quote, a viable option, end quote, for certain Guantanamo prisoners. Really? And White House officials have already made clear that they will not meet the January 20 coming deadline for emptying Guantanamo. That's what Obama said when he took office, remember? That was before corporate America and military America sat his ass down and said, listen, what are you doing? Okay, you won the election. Now here's what you have to do. And here's what you may not do. Within this framework, have fun. So, Military Commissions Act of 2009. Good God. We're going to open the phones. What the hell? The number here is 877-996-2556. If you have comment on what we're talking about here, that would be now's a good time. Let me we have a break. When we come back, we're going to do our report from our economic affairs correspondent, Prairie 2. And also maybe some of this was at Market Watch today about the death of the soul of capitalism. All right, stick around. I'm Mike Malloy.
With the truth. It's more Mike Malloy.
Welcome back. 25 before the hour. Before we get to your phone calls, let's do a Prairie 2 report. He writes, the price of gold spiked up sharply today on the news that the International Monetary Fund has been quietly selling gold to India over the past few weeks, totaling 200 tons. The excuse given was that the IMF needed to raise money for its bailouts of various third world countries. Some are newly members of the third world, like Iceland. This need for cash is a transparent lie, of course. The IMF does not own any of its own gold, but has pledges from its members to provide over 3,000 tons of gold to provide legitimacy to the IMF. If it needed currency, it could have all at once by the same mechanism. The third world country, the IMF, based in Washington, D.C., is desperately trying to prop up, the IMF is desperately trying to prop up, is the United States of America. By taking dollars out of circulation, they hope to keep countries like India from dumping them on the market. Now, China has been quietly buying gold for several years, purchasing at least 100 tons this year alone, bringing its total holdings to well over 1,000 tons. Good God. China has been telling its own people to put at least 5% of their savings into copper, silver, or gold. In the U.S., coins contain no precious metals to speak of. Even copper, so-called pennies, are made of nickel, and the mint would prefer to make coins of steel, if not stop minting altogether. The rest of our money is imaginary. Why mint coins? The worldwide banking crisis last year panicked hordes of euros into buying dollars because the historical belief has been that the U.S. is the most stable economy in the world. This fiction has worn thin, and we're gradually converting to a gold-backed world economy. This is a problem for the holders of trillions of dollars as a reserve currency. It's a really big problem for any country that has been printing dollars to finance its trade deficit. China has been unloading dollars for hard assets and natural resources anywhere they can. India was not in a position to do this on any scale, so they went with gold. In the U.S., Warren Buffett is apparently on the same page. He paid $34 billion in cash today for a 100% stake in a railroad, one of the hardest of hard assets you can still buy in the U.S. If times get really hard, Buffett can probably count on government subsidies for operating expenses. And if we convert entirely to fascism, railroads will be in big demand. You know, moving troops and tanks and people. Prairie 2. Go to his website, prairienumeral2.com. Yeah, I remember how the fascists moved people on their rail lines, huh? Don't you? All right, where are we? Phone calls. Dan is in Las Vegas, listening on XM. Hey, Dan.
Hey, Mike. How
hey.
You doing?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Good. I like your show. I just think it's, as a political movement, I'm more of a right-winger in certain ways, but I've always been kind of conservative, more like Pat Buchanan. He wrote a book about, you know, America should be a nation, not an empire. And I think there's certain ways where the left wing and the right wing could come together. Just as Americans, like, we don't want to conquer the world. We just want to be a productive country. And I'm not really sure where to go about that. It's not a left wing, right wing thing all the time. It's just Americans, you know?
Well,
I don't want to conquer the world.
I disagree with you, Dan. It pretty much is a left-wing, right-wing thing. Look at the, since everybody's talking about, look at the 23rd Congressional District in New York, the race today. You had a Democrat and a Republican. And then along comes the rump of the Republican Party, the Glenn Beck, Rush Limbaugh, Sarah Palin faction. And they decide that the Republican, that would be you, is too liberal. So they undermine the Republican. They more or less kick her out of the party, and they promote to run, and apparently he's going to win, a so-called independent or conservative. The conservative, not a Republican. The Republican was so beaten down by the right-wingers in your party, I'm assuming you're a registered Republican, that she folded. Oh. She just got out. So what you're going to have in the 23rd District in New York is an extreme right-wing fascist. Because please don't kid yourself for a moment. The Becks and Limbaughs and the rest of these right-wing bastards are no more interested in coming together with the Democrats or the progressives than they're interested in cutting their own throats. Look, here's what's going on, Dan, and you've got to consider this. I don't care if you believe it or not. It's your life. It's your country. But you've got to consider this. There's a struggle in this country right now to try to maintain, on the one hand, the fiction that we're a democratic republic and elect our representatives and it's all above board. On the other hand, is this strong move that started with Ronald Reagan to fascism. We're very close to it. And when we get to fascism, there might still be the appearance of elections like there was in Italy and Germany and Spain or wherever there have been fascist governments, but they will be so patently fake and fraudulent until the people finally say to hell with it and don't show up at the polls anymore. So there is a struggle. Don't kid yourself that you know the Rodney King thing can happen. Why can't we all get along?
Right.
There is a movement in this country that it goes all the way back to the 30s, frankly. And then it was put to sleep by Roosevelt, and it was stayed asleep during World War II because we had to fight foreign fascists, even though we had people in this country who wanted to align the United States with Germany. You know, people like Henry Ford and Charles Lindbergh and, just on and on and on. Joe Kennedy.
Could I make one comment, though?
Sure.
I think, as far as me and my political life, I've seen this immigration from Mexico come in, and I've had friends that are construction workers, and our wages keep going down and down and down, and they keep importing more and more poor people. And the Republicans are the only ones standing up for Americans, saying, like, you know, we don't need to compete. There's it's free trade and mass immigration problem.
Well, wait a second, Dan. How are Republicans standing up? I think what you're trying to say is Republicans are standing up for the working man and woman. How?
The only ones that were against this immigration issue a couple of years ago, the Republicans were the only ones saying stop. But
Dan, I got to put you on hold because you're trying to outshout me. What I want you to tell me, if you can. And if you can't, okay, I'm going to move on. What have Republicans done concerning immigration? I'm not talking about building a fence or putting vigilante groups together to go kill people. What have they done as a political party to take care of so-called illegal immigration? Just tell me what they've done.
Oh, you cut off.
No, you're not cut off.
Oh. They stopped the amnesty bill. That was going on a couple of years ago.
What amnesty bill are you talking about?
That would make all illegals legal.
There was never a bill to make all illegals legal.
That's a Democratic plan, though.
All right, listen, I got to go. I got to leave you. Dan, I've said before, I can't handle that. I can't handle that. When I get a caller who's had their brain sucked out, like Dan, and replaced by Fox garbage. There was not a bill introduced that said all illegals are legal. Are you out of your mind? You know that is so right out of the right wing playbook as to render it almost. Never mind. No, I'm sorry. I just can't deal with that at all. Spike is in Mount Pocono, PA, listening on Sirius. Hey, Spike.
Oh, God, look great, Mike. Let me tell you, Election Day has just brought on a bigger migraine than what I've had of late. I'm very agitated, to say the least. You know, first of all, the Democrats only seem to come out liberals only seem to come out and vote every 4 years, essentially.
Right.
They didn't really come out in numbers today, the vote, which handed it over to the crazy teabaggers and the, quote, greatest generation, who more and more have turned into the most selfish generation go you-know-what-yourself, I'm going to die soon anyways, so all you people that are going to inherit the mess that we put into power, essentially, by voting right-wing for the last 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
We don't care that you're going to have nothing to back it up. I mean, they vote in one county here, they came out in droves and overwhelmingly voted down supporting a library, which had significantly had its funds cut anyways by Ed Rendell, our Democrat name-only governor.
Mm-hmm.
Right in this area, it looks like we're going to lose on getting an expansion to finally build a large community college campus. as someone who's out of work and trying to go back to school, but maybe find a new career, that really frustrates me that people would just...
Too bad.
You know.
Hey, Spike, I got to leave it there. Listen, I appreciate you calling in, okay?
All right,
man. Thanks. Appreciate it. We got to take a break. We'll be right back.
Get your news unfiltered, only with Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. I got a couple of emails. The other issue that is getting attention, especially in the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgendered community, is the referendum in Maine. The legislature in that state passed a law back in February that allowed same-sex marriages, and this referendum would rescind that law. This is from Tony in Maine. Mike, it's election night, and yes, it's an off-year election season with not too much to talk about, but here in Maine, we are in the midst of a fight with the Christian wackos to repeal a state law that allows for same-sex marriage. It's been an ugly battle, which included a smear campaign by the Yes on One people. If you vote yes, it means you want to stop gay folk from having the same rights as non-gay folk. The Yes on One gay people that tried to scare people into believing this bill had something to do with teaching gay marriage in our schools. Jesus Christ. I get so sick of this. Well, at 10 p.m., Tony writes, the No on One votes are leading 53% to 47%. A no vote will keep the law that was passed in February. So, to keep the law that legalizes same-sex marriage in Maine, that it's ahead 53% to 47%. Tony writes, it's still early. I think 25% of precincts are reporting, and we still haven't had results from our largest city, Portland. But it's still a lead. I'm keeping my fingers crossed that the voters of Maine will be the first to reject the efforts of the religious nutbags from giving gay men and women their legal rights. That's from Tony in Maine. Gordon, who is in Oklahoma City, writes, latest results from Maine. In favor of marriage equality, 51.2%. Against marriage equality, 48.8%. So the number is a little bit different here. But, and Gordon's email was sent 6 minutes after Tony's was, so we'll see. As far as electing for the governor of Virginia, you know, a graduate of Pat Roberts, I believe he is a graduate of Regents University, which means he's an extreme Christian freak. I mean, the kind of Christian freak that probably if he follows Pat Robertson, which he must if he went to his university, he believes the best way to handle your smart-ass children is to kill them, because that's what Leviticus says. You know, that kind of stuff. A real crazed, non-Christ-loving Christian. One of those vicious, nasty Christians. Anti-woman's right to privacy, anti-gay human rights, anti-everything. that has to do with social progress in this country. Would like to reinstitute Virginia's miscegenation laws, which were the last in the country to go, I believe, back in 67? It was still illegal in Virginia for blacks and whites to get married. Oh, my God, my God, my God. Crazy, crazy stuff, huh? Rebecca is in Asheville, North Carolina. Hey, Rebecca.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
I was just going to tell you that in 1984, when I was a kid, I was desperately afraid that if Ronald Reagan got reelected, the military-industrial complex would grow out of control. And the reason why I thought this is because I saw one of those bumper stickers that said, everything will be put to rights when the Air Force has to hold a bake sale to buy their whatever bombers and my kids' library books.
Mm-hmm.
That has stayed with me. And, you know, I'm in college now.
Mm-hmm.
And what you were saying earlier about how if all of the losses in all of the states were put together, it would not be equal to what the United States military-industrial complex costs.
Right.
Does that include all of our schools, the state schools, as well?
I would assume yes. I mean, it doesn't cost $1 trillion to, you know, if there are 50 states, that would work out to $20 billion per state for education. And I don't know. I'm reasonably certain that we don't spend that much on education in this country. So, yeah, it all gets washed away. Every bit of the necessary expenditures in this country. What did I hear? The defense and homeland security now eats up about 80% of our tax dollars, federal tax dollars, about 80%. I think it's 80% now. It's close to it. Goes for this Department of Homeland Security, which somebody please tell me what they do. And the rest of it goes to military spending. And I mean, we're not at war with any state. We are apparently in fighting a war against a tactic that is terrorism. And I don't think we're even sure. We keep trying. Look, we cut deals in Iraq. We bought off the Sunnis in Iraq. We're trying to buy off the Taliban in Afghanistan. And I don't know anymore, Rebecca. I'm completely confused. Rebecca, I got to leave it there. Thanks. Call again, okay? Appreciate hearing from you. Stay with us. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Molloy. The hour. This is the Malloy program. As Prairie 2 writes, regarding amnesty to undocumented workers, the only one who ever did that was Ronald Reagan. not the Democrats, like my poor misinformed caller was trying to convince me. NAFTA, which is post-Reagan, NAFTA drove millions of poor corn farmers north. Republicans knew it would. The big meat packers, owned by the U.S. corn exporters, set up recruiting centers in the Mexican towns to provide relief to the Mexican farmers they put out of business with NAFTA by resettling them in the United States. U.S. companies did that. I think you could count the number of immigration raids mounted by the Bush crime family on one hand, and the only raided plants that were being unionized. No corporate officer was ever prosecuted, but union officials were charged with harboring illegals, like they were the ones providing them with jobs. So to the guy who called from Las Vegas, you know, to call my program and tell me that the Democrats wanted to or did grant or tried to grant amnesty, you're out of your goddamn mind. And I don't like that. I don't like this kind of ignorance. I've said it before. And I would appreciate if right-wingers who are so misinformed, conservatives, Republicans, I don't care what you call yourselves, just don't call. Seriously, because I don't have the time or the inclination to educate you on the air. I'm just not interested in that. Some of these facts are not at my fingertips anyway. But I knew damn good and well that no Democrat has ever offered, you know, what this guy said. Oh, Jesus, what's this? Paul is in New Mexico. What?
Mike, well, I'm glad I've been on hold now for a while. I'll let my blood pressure get down. Pat Robertson advocates killing smart-ass children.
What?
That's a question.
I didn't hear it.
Did you say that Pat Robertson, now, I don't follow the guy that closely, but did you or did you not say that he advocated killing smart-ass children?
No, the Bible does. Pat Robertson follows the Bible. The Bible is the inerrant word of God. Go to Leviticus. Have you never read the Bible?
Okay, I'll just give you an X on that one. Strike. Okay.
You can't talk like that, so I'm going to have to drop your call. Oh, I know. You know, some of these people don't understand. Now, if you're listening online, you heard his curse word, but... I guess he thought, you know, since he was listening on XM or Sirius, that he could, you know, he could say that. But you can't. Now, if you want to clean up your language and call back, maybe we can talk again. Not tonight. Don't call back tonight. But, yeah, Pat Robertson advocates killing errant children because he believes in the absolute, by God, inerrancy of the Bible. There's no equivocation from Pat Robertson. Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell, don't you remember? They're the ones that said that the reason we got bombed on 9/11 was because of the feminists and the queers and the liberals and the socialists and the ACLU, and it so pissed off God that God dropped the veil of protection that Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell insist are up there because good Christians pray it up there. But God got pissed off and said, okay, that's enough for these schmucks, and allowed the veil of protection to come down. Don't call my program, sir, with ignorant questions like that, okay? I don't give a tinker's damn about your blood pressure, all right? If you want to listen to my program, go ahead. But don't call. I don't like people like you. I don't like your ignorance, and your ignorance is terminal. I just don't, okay? You can listen. You can buy a podcast subscription, but don't call. I don't like dumbasses. That's all. Okay? Especially people who are biblically illiterate. And you don't understand what your Bible says. You have no idea what your Bible says.
Well, that's the Old Testament.
Yeah, that's right. And all of it. Every word, according to evangelicals like Robertson. Every word! Is absolute truth. So yes, Pat Robertson advocates the murder of children who smart ass off to their parents. Absolutely. Now go away. John is in San Fernando, California. Hey, John.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Yeah, boy, I tell you, listening to that last guy, it makes me despair for humanity.
Well, yeah.
I honestly don't know what to say.
I don't either.
Last time I voted for a Democrat was 1992, Bill Clinton. That was it. I realized after 4 years of Clinton that the Democrats and the Republicans, it's a club.
It is.
Yeah.
It is indeed.
These guys just work amongst themselves. And, you know, the Democrats, they'll brush a few crumbs off the table. The Republicans don't even want to brush the crumbs off.
Yeah, the Democrats are, they're fascist light. They haven't gotten to the point of Cheney and Bush and Beck and Limbaugh and Palin and the rest of these monstrous bastards. Democrats are not there yet. But what Democrats are enablers. You know, when Nancy Pelosi became Speaker of the House, I don't think there was a Democrat in this country, at least a real Democrat, a real liberal, a real progressive, who really believed in our Constitution, who didn't send her an email begging her to allow the House Judiciary Committee to begin impeachment hearings. The Republicans did it with Clinton because he lied about his girlfriend. George Bush lies us into a goddamn war where a million people die, including thousands of Americans. And Nancy Pelosi sits there on her rump and says, no, she's not going to do that. That's off the table.
Hey, Mike, can I say one more thing?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm just...
No, that's okay.
All right, go ahead.
I'm listening to you, man. And all I wanted to say was, thank God that Boston is getting the light of day.
You're well. All right. Thanks, John.
You're welcome.
I appreciate your comment. What John is referring to, we are now carried in Boston on AM 1510 WWZN Radio. 10 p.m. to midnight, Monday through Friday. You miss the first hour, but maybe that'll change after a while. Anyway, we appreciate the fact that WWZN is carrying this program. I respect the courage of the program people there because this is a pretty volatile program. And if you're a listener in Boston, you're hearing the program for the first time tonight, I know it's scary, but don't worry about it. If you listen for 2 weeks, you'll stick around. If you don't like what you hear, tough. You know, that's all I can say, tough. All right, back to phone calls here. Oliver is in Chicago, listening on XM. Hey, Oliver.
Hey, Mike, how you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm not bad. Before I go on, I'd like to advise any right-wingers to go grab their beta blockers, but also go to the Internet and check some of this stuff out.
Right.
I actually produced a movie about three illegal immigrants' experience with coming to Chicago.
Really?
And so let's lay out the facts. In 1986, a Democratic congressman and a Republican president granted amnesty to a large amount of undocumented workers who came to America because there really is no other way once they're here. We can't round up
right
people. You know, I hear these people say, oh, let's round up every 12 million illegals and send them back to Mexico. When Mohammed Atta got his visa renewal papers in May of 2002, my faith in their ability to do things like that was, washed up pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing I wanted to call and say was, if Republicans were interested in protecting the working man, and they genuinely thought that illegal immigration was the driver of the downtrodden,
mm-hmm.
why, and this is a fact from my film, why are there less than 100 worksite enforcers for the INS
right
currently in the United States? 100 people, that's two a state. Two people are supposed to be able to monitor all the commerce in a state. And the answer is really, really simple then, ultimately. They want the illegals because they can pay them less.
Sure.
Because they're in the pockets of people who want to pay them.
Hey, Oliver, can you hold on a second?
Yeah.
All right, let me put you on hold because I got to do a break here. But I want to chat with you a little bit more. Just stay right there. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy. For my feet, some tend to do it like me. I'm too busy. Got to put your facts to see. Here's what you get. You made your bed, you better lie in it. You choose your leaders and place your trust. And the line will come down and the promise will come. It's a dream of truth before the rockets and guns. And the public wants what the public gets. But I don't get what the society wants. I'm going down the ground. The boys are shouting for the landslide. 21 past the hour, talking with Oliver, who called in from Chicago about this, the Republicans and immigration, because he's a filmmaker. Go ahead, Oliver.
Hey, Mike. Yeah. So, you know, the thing that I would like to say to you know, the right-wing anti-immigration movement is that you have every right to believe what you believe about immigration. You're wrong, but you have every right to believe that. But, you know, the big thing that strikes me is that nobody talks about the fact that there is no worksite enforcement. Well, you do, and thank you for doing what you do and fighting the good fight. I don't agree with everything that you say, but you know what? Ultimately, I agree with you, you know, your spirit and what you're trying to do. And so, you know, to any Republican listening who really genuinely believes that immigration is, you know, driving down their you know, their wages or whatever, you need to call whoever your representative is and encourage them or tell them you will not vote for them again unless they, mandate or legislate increased worksite enforcement of illegal immigration, because every business in this country has this wink and nod system where, you know, oh yeah, we don't employ illegal, but we do.
Well,
and,
you know, the immigrant issue, the so-called illegal immigrant issue, is to the right wing exactly what the abortion issue is to the right wing, or what the gay marriage issue is to the right wing, and that is, it's an issue that they use to reach down the throats of their base and grab hold of their insides and shake them until their base can't even think straight. So, you know, Republicans are no more interested in cutting off illegal immigration than they are in cutting off their own heads, because, as you point out, most people should know this, illegal or legal immigrants, it doesn't make any difference. Let's stick with illegal immigrants. First of all, deny Americans jobs with American citizens jobs with wages that the unions and the working class have worked for 100 years to maintain, because these employers, they don't give a damn. They'll hire somebody at $10 an hour for a job that an American worker used to get $22 an hour.
Exactly.
And it's just a joke. I mean, when I listen to these Republicans rail against illegal immigrants, I just want to scream, because it's not, you know, Cesar Chavez worked against illegal immigrants.
Yep.
You know, he was trying to unionize workers in California, and his ass was kicked up around his shoulders every time he turned around.
Yep.
By the Republicans, by the right wingers. But, you know, Huelga, United Farm Workers, Cesar Chavez, he was against illegal immigrants because he understood what it was doing. So, but you take the average Republican, the average right-winger, the average conservative who can't find his ass with both hands anyway, he's not going to understand that issue. You ask these guys who Cesar Chavez was, and they'll say, oh, I don't know, welterweight champion last year?
I don't know.
I don't either.
But, you know, it gets me to just a very small, or it's a huge point, but it's very easy and concise to distill. And, it, you know, whether it's health care, the banks, whatever it is, the banks aren't the issue. The health care isn't the issue. They are issues. But as long as the money is still the driver of politics, as long as PACs are paying for candidates, none of this is ever going to change.
Well, that's true. So, that's true. And, Oliver, I got to leave it there. And I appreciate you calling. I hope to hear from you again. That's absolutely true. And I think this has been an underlying theme, certainly of this program, for years. You know, I advocated, what, 5-6 years ago, as everything was spiraling out of control, if you really want to get serious about the American people getting back or reasserting control, if we ever really had it, but let's assume we did, reasserting control of our electoral system, you get the money out. And it's very simple. Nobody, under any circumstances, at all, ever, nothing, no way, and if you get caught, you go to prison. You cannot accept more than $100 from anybody at any time, any place, if you're going to run for office. A. B. No more political ads on television. Period. Sorry. You don't like it? Look, we had elections in this country for 200 years, 175, 180 years before these filthy, lying TV commercials. But that's free speech, Mike. No, it's not. It's poison. It's disgusting. You want to run for political office, then get your ass out, go to the lodge halls, go to the VFW, go to PTA meetings, work your butt off.
to get elected, and you can't take more than $100. You need $100,000 to get elected. Okay, you're gonna have to find 1,000 people to give you $100 apiece, and not a dime of corporate money. If it comes from a corporation, you're automatically disqualified. Period. But of course, that'll never happen, because corporations, you see, have the same constitutional rights as you do, True Seeker. So put that in your smoke and pipe it. We have a break here. We're going to come back and take some more phone calls. So stick around if you dare. And again, welcome to AM 1510 in Boston, if they're still listening. We appreciate you joining the Malloy affiliate family. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Watches C-SPAN so you don't have to. It's More Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. The Washington Independent is reporting that it appears that Hoffman, the conservative candidate in upstate New York in the 23rd district, is going to lose. I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. I hope so. You know, like I said, I don't care about the governorship in New Jersey and New York, or I'm sorry, Virginia. That, you know, is frankly kind of immaterial. Those, especially Virginia. But, and Corzine, really, you know, another billionaire governor, yawn, you know, who cares? All right, a couple of comments on this immigration stuff. All right, where is it? I had something, and now it's... Here it is. All right, let me see here. Oh, yeah, Prairie 2 writes, the reason illegals started pouring in under Reagan was that he suppressed the only thing it could, that had been keeping the bulk of illegals out, and that was unions. You couldn't get a union card if they found out you were illegal, and they checked. And as I mentioned earlier, Prairie 2 says even Cesar Chavez led anti-illegal immigration protest marches to the border because illegals were used to break his farm worker union. You know, anybody who has the belief that anybody on the Democratic side wants illegal workers in this country, like I said, has had their brains sucked out and replaced with air by pieces of human waste like Glenn Beck, Rush Limbaugh. That's why I don't like him to call my program. I can't stand that kind of ignorance. Now, regarding Obama... You know, I've said it before, and a couple of people have said, you know, Obama was a blank slate, and we wrote on it anything we wanted to. Another one from Prayer, too, is just busy as hell tonight. He writes, it wasn't so much the Democrats wrote on Obama's blank slate, but Fox Television did, fascist radio did, and the corporate media wrote a lot of things on his slate. Besides giving him horns and a tail, they went on about how he would tax and spend like a socialist, and the government would take over everything. If you translate that into English and take out the nutty references, he sounded like Roosevelt. And we heard that 24/7. Unfortunately, Obama didn't say any of those things. and Michael in Roswell regarding that huge defense budget or Pentagon budget. He writes, I found in 2004 there's one place in the government that can give the figures for what's defense and what's not. That's an obscure agency called the Bureau of Economic Analysis. And it's that agency's job to analyze each year's budget. One of the tasks they do is take every line item in the discretionary budget, except for interest on the debt, and put each one in a particular pile, defense, roads, education, etc. The last run-through I did on their numbers, plus interest on the debt, related to so-called defense, put the amount then at $810 billion, which was close to 80% of income tax revenues. I suppose I need to get their latest data, which is probably only fiscal year 2007, but since the defense appropriations continue to skyrocket upward, it can only be more of the tax revenue pie than it was in 2004 when it was 80%. Of tax revenues. By my own calculations, Michael writes, factoring in inflation, if we were to decide that we could return to a true peacetime defense budget, forego wars of opportunity, concentrate on territorial defense, restructure the intelligence agencies, throw out the privateers in the national security industry, the defense appropriation bill would be about $160 to $180 billion in current dollars. As opposed to $810 billion. We live in an insane country, Truth Seekers. It truly is. And by insane country, I mean the system that we have, we find ourselves with now. The political system, the economic system, the system of spending, all of it. It's madness. It's total bonkers. It's lunacy. And it is killing us. This is why this country is in its death throes. Is because we spend $810 billion, I'll call it a trillion, on defense and homeland security, and nothing on the issues that need to be addressed with money. And as Michael points out, $160, $180 billion would be, I would pare it down even further. Who's going to attack us? We have, what do we still have? 6,000, 8,000, 9,000 nuclear warheads? Who's going to attack us? Unless we have a president and a vice president who understand that an act of terror is about to be committed and decide, let's let it happen because then we can do all those things we wanted to do. You know, that was Cheney's attitude. George Bush's attitude was, hey, I'm going to go out and play some golf. Joe writes, here in California, it's always been Republican governors who keep enabling the importation of cheap Mexican labor into the state in order to keep wages down. Cesar Chavez led marches to the border to protest illegal immigration, accompanied by Democratic lawmakers. Yet the uninformed working poor continue to buy into the supposed populism of right-wing corporate freaks like Pat Buchanan. No right-winger, no corporatist wants to stop illegal immigration. My God, that might not keep the unions down. If the caller Dan was in a union, he might learn that. But then, no union exists in this world. Joe, writing. All right, Carlos is in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Hey, Carlos.
How you doing, Mike? Remember me?
Do I owe you money? Do I owe you money?
I owe money everywhere.
Okay, well, if I don't owe you money, I don't remember you, but hi.
Anyway, like I said, I agree with you and everything. And by the way, you know who's going to make your fajitas while they put cheap tires on your car, you know?
Yeah.
You don't let the illegal immigrants in.
Yeah.
You know, Mike, this country, since inception, hypocrisy has been its name, right?
Yeah.
Because the Indians, you know?
Yeah.
Me being a Chicano, or I don't even know what I am, a Chicano, Mexican, Indian, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, Israel, now there's something else, you know? You're from Toledo, right?
Yes, I am.
And you were talking about Christian prisons?
Yeah.
What are they worried about, man? The cell guards, they're all Christian, you know? I mean, I did a little, let's say, vacation time in your state there.
Uh-huh.
You know, and one of the guards was a Irish Catholic. He had a flat top.
Yeah.
He was Catholic, and the Puerto Rican, there was a guard. He was a Christian fundamentalist.
Yeah.
Always preaching, you know, and torturing us.
Where was this, in Georgia or Ohio?
No, there, Ohio, man.
Oh, in Ohio. Well, you know, I'm not in Ohio now.
No, I know that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you're in Atlanta.
Yeah, right. Outside Atlanta, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, you know, and it's funny, the guy that called you, right? I was born in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And here, all these references, you know. Being, going to school in Mexico and here, you learn the hypocrisy of governments, you know?
Yes.
All around, man, you know, like, it's just, I mean, I agree on everything you say, Mike. I mean, I'm not just trying to butter you up or whatever.
No, I don't make any profound statements. There's nothing really to, you know, a lot of people say, well, I agree with a lot of what you say. Well, all I say is opinion. You know, I have no
That's
facts.
True.
You know, I rely on my listeners to provide the facts. I have no facts. This is, I'm not Tom Hartman. Tom Hartman has a lot of facts.
Oh, man, that guy's met everybody, the Pope, you know? He's met everybody. You can tell him something. Oh, I did that.
I was in the moon with the astronauts,
you know?
Right. I like Tom, you know, and I like his wife. What I'm saying is he has the facts. I don't have any facts, Carlos. All I have is opinion and an attitude. And a lot of times when people say, you know, I agree with your point of view, I agree with what you're saying, they're not agreeing with my facts, because their facts are probably more fact-based than mine. Mine is just screaming emotion. I get so pissed off sometimes, I can't even think. So I'm real clear. What I'm trying to say, Carlos, I'm real clear when somebody says I agree with you, that they're not, you know, they're not validating any facts I might present. Like the caller from Chicago a minute ago, the filmmaker said, you know, listen, I agree with a lot of what you say, not everything. I get that. I understand that. I'm always inclined to say no, when somebody says I agree with everything you say, until I realize, well, they're not agreeing with my facts, because I don't have any. What they're agreeing with is the emotion. They're pissed off. I'm pissed off. I have a lot of people who are believers, who are Christian. They're either Catholic or Protestant. I have a lot of Jews, a lot of Muslims who listen to this program. Somehow, they put up with my atheism. They put up with the way I slam all religions. I hate religion. I hate the institutions of religion. But they continue to listen. Now, they don't agree with me on that. But they hook into, just like I hook into when I hear it, they hook into the anger, the rage, the frustration, you know, the unwillingness to continue to take it in the jaw any longer. How many times are we going to allow people to just punch us out? How much longer? You know, that's the thing. That's what people agree with. And I, you know, I get that. I understand that. You know, I'm just the guy at night who has some opinions and emotion and a point of view. That's all. Before the hour, thanks to our crew, Sharon Gordy, Bruce Enberg, Kate Petrini, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, Ben Birch, and Kathy Bay, our executive producer. Lou is in Fort Drum, Florida, or New York?
No, Florida. Hey, what's up?
Fort Drum, Florida. Hi, Lou.
Yeah, I'm not in the 23rd. Sorry. Have you ever heard the album by Nine Inch Nails called Year Zero? I think you'd love it. It's brilliant.
Who's it by?
Nine Inch Nails.
Oh, Nine Inch Nails. I'm sure we've got it here somewhere.
Yeah, it's a very dystopian version of
right.
It was what the future would be in 2012 or 20 22, whatever.
Right, right.
But, because, you know, I know you're a big Queen fan like I am, and they were influenced by Queen, because they covered Get Down, Make Laws, and they did a great cover. I hate Queen covers. Usually they suck, but they did a good version of Get Down, Make Laws. But, you know, this whole immigrant thing, I mean, it's like Tom Harmon's article that he wrote for Common Dreams. It's an illegal employer problem.
Right.
Not an illegal immigrant problem.
That's true.
You know what? If Jorge or Jose swam the Rio Grande, they're not going to swim it because there's no jobs here.
Right. And they're not going to swim it because nobody will hire them.
Exactly. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, the emphasis, and this is what fascism does, the emphasis is always placed on people who can't defend themselves, whether it's American workers or the weakened unions or illegal immigrants who come here because we've destroyed their economy. That's where fascism always puts its greatest punch. And meanwhile, the people that back fascism or corporatism sit back on their large asses and say, yeah, we're not going to let any of that happen again. God damn. You know, when they don't realize that they're being eaten alive by the very political economic system that they're supporting. It's madness. Madness.
Absolutely. And then when you jabron down the wages so much that nobody can afford the crap made in China, well, why do we have the economy in the situation we have it now?
Well,
nobody can go to Walmart and buy this crap. Hello? It's so retarded.
I hear you, Lou. I get it. I really do. I got to move on. Thanks, pal. I'm looking at CNN's website. This is news 20 minutes old, with 85% of the precincts reporting in New York's 23rd congressional district. The conservative, this crazy person, Hoffman, has 45% of the vote. Owens, the Democrat, has 49%, and the Republican, Scosa Fava, who dropped down, has 6%. So as of 20 minutes ago, the neo-Nazi Hoffman and his neo-Nazi backers were being defeated. So hopefully that will maintain during the night. Don't let anyone kid you. The New Jersey governor's race, the Virginia governor's race mattered nothing. Absolutely nothing to the proto-fascists in this country or the neo-fascists in this country. It meant nothing. The race that they poured everything they could into was this obscure, broke county in upstate or district in upstate New York, the 23rd. That's where all the firepower went. So if the Democrat can defeat both this crazed Republican and withstand the votes that went to Scosa Fava, even though she's gone. You know, I mean, who votes for somebody who's not even running anymore? But that's what Republicans do. So if the Democrat can withstand the siphoning of votes to the real Republican and defeat this criminal son of a bitch conservative, then I think it's a clear indication that the fascists are going to have to work even harder. And they will. I mean, they definitely will. But when you hear the crowing tomorrow morning about, well, we swept Virginia, so what? You know, that doesn't mean anything. I mean, come on. The only race that makes any difference, and no matter how it turns out, I'll say the same thing. If the conservative nutball wins, I'll say the same thing. That's the only race that made any difference regarding this fascism that's slowly seeping into our system, into our country. So that's the one to watch. And as of 20 minutes ago, the Democrat was beating the ghost Republican who's still on the ballot and this crazed conservative. Steven's in Burbank, California. Hey, Steven.
Yeah, hi, Mike.
Hi.
We have this guy, Dan, from Las Vegas. And
yeah.
It reminded me of a Doonesbury cartoon years ago where a conservative was ragging on a liberal, and the liberal just gave up and looked him right in the eye, gave him a deadpan look, and said, "You tell me." Now, would we have these corporate executives in the top 300 or 500 or whatever they are, they're shipping jobs overseas to China, India, Mexico, all over the place. Just ask them. Who are these CEOs who are shipping your jobs overseas? What political party do they contribute to? we don't have to try and tell them facts anymore. We just make them look it up for us. Hey, I'm asking you a question. Give me an answer, you know? And that, you know, I think they might be surprised if they really did some research. But you know what, Mike? I don't think they really would. I don't think they'd really try. I don't know.
I don't either. There is no way that you can educate people who are willfully ignorant. How are you going to do that?
I don't know. When I get ragged by a right winger now, I just ask him to spell hors d'oeuvres. And, you know, get a blank look, and that's the end of that noise. The only reason I know that is because I got it from mainstream culture, because I was watching, like, Family Guy or something like that, you know?
I hear you. Hey, I got to go. Thanks. I appreciate it, Stephen. We'll talk again. Thanks for hanging out tonight. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lipped. I'm Mike Malloy.